want to stab a bigger pool than Kanye.
Oh, my goodness. I'm telling you, it's big business, baby. We're doing big business out here. Devlin's cutting the checks, man.
Oh, yeah. With your checkbook.
Look at this right here. This is like
the big denial.
No, sir.
We got next. This is Free Association with Dave Zarum and J.D. Bunkus.
Welcome to Free Association.
Big business!
Big business is open, and you are listening to Sports as Weekly, Raptors and NBA podcast.
Yes, sir.
Now, what a time to be a Raptors fan, eh?
Yes, sir.
Record win streaks, although we're taping this on a Monday. For all I know, it's over now, but we're going to pretend that the win streak is still going on.
It was good while it lasted. We had a blast.
It was good. The Nuggets are a tough out. We've been saying this the
whole time.
Oh,
they're 9-15 at home this season. I'm tired of hearing about the air. Yes, the air is thin up there. Get over it.
But in here, it's full of hot takes. Oh. I could feel it. We got a ton to get to on the show today. We're going to look at the historic win streak, share what we like, what we don't like about it. Believe it or not, there are things not to like during this thing. Also, we're going to talk to former Cleveland Cavaliers guard and a member of LeBron's inner circle, Damon Jones.
The inner circle.
Right. So he's going to join us to put his spin on the Cavs, Blatt, lose situation.
Not to give things away.
Not to give things away, but it's a spin fest up in here.
So
we're going to talk to Damon Jones about that a little bit later on. Like I said, the win streak, a lot of all-star talk as well. And we're going to fire up the trade machine. I'm excited about this.
Oh, I'm really excited. I made way too many trades. We originally were debating about how many trades we were going to do. And I was like, I don't know. I don't think there's that many. I made so many trades. I have tons. I took photos of them even. We're going to go through them. I'm excited. People love fake trades.
It is.
You know what else people love? John Scott. I came into work today expecting that there was going to be Raptors fever at work and we were going to really push the 11-game win streak here at Sportsnet. And it was like, but did you see John Scott? He scored a goal.
So if you're listening and you thought, maybe I can escape all this John Scott talk on the Raptors podcast on Sportsnet. Nope.
Coming up, why I think John Scott would make a great small forward.
Hit JD up at JD Bunkus on Twitter. You can find me at Dave Zarum. Of course, Free Association every Tuesday on the iTunes, on the interwebs, and Tuesday nights on the Fan 590.
Yeah, always exciting to hear us on Tuesday nights.
But like
After you finish watching basketball games, sometimes you just leave it on, your Sportsnet Rogers pack, bang, Free Association, close you down for the night, shut you down.
Look at how that works out. Listen, we got to get right to it, JD. We got so much to get to.
Let's do it. Big business. He seemed impressed by the way you came in. Tell us the story. I know you're not boring. I was afraid that you would not insist. You sound so sleepy. Just take this, now leave me. I said, please don't slow me down if I'm going too fast. You're in a strange part of our town.
What up, though? This is Jalen Rose, and you're listening to Free Association.
This is Free Association. So we do our big question. And this week we've got a big streak. So my questions to you. I'm going to do a breakdown. What is your favorite things about the win streak so far? The things you like. And what don't you like during this win streak?
Well, what I like the most out of this win streak. Listen, there's a lot to like. Right off the top of my head, the fact that it's happening on both ends of the floor. Yep. Offense, defense, third in the East. In January, congrats to Coach Casey, Coach of the Month. In that span, his team had the third best offense in the East and the third best defense in the NBA overall. So that just tells you a total team playing total complete basketball, obviously.
Any minus points for quality of competition?
Well, no. I mean, you're right that they haven't really been tested. I mean, Miami might have been the toughest team.
I'd say Clippers were probably the best team
that they beat. And they smoked them. Boston too. Miami would have been if they had guys healthy. That was a kind of gimme because they were all missing. But you know, the other thing that really sticks out is, and I know you're probably going to talk about guys who are providing consistency who didn't used to. But I look at your two stars, DeRozan and Lowry, and I think the thing I like the most is the fact that both of those guys have been doing it at the same time. You know, a lot of times it seems like they kind of trade off and one can make up for a poor night from the other one. But the fact that both your stars have been playing at their absolute apex so far this season at the same time is huge. And I think I know it sounds simple, but it's the biggest reason why they're on this streak. And also the biggest reason why, you know, the streak kind of breeds optimism for me, at least.
During the winning streak, they're averaging a combined 46 points per game.
DeRozan and Lowry?
Lowry. They're both shooting 44% plus from the field. Lowry, 48%. I think the good thing, a thing I like is Lowry's three-point shot looks like it's back.
Yes.
He's shooting the ball with a lot more confidence from three. It's so funny, though. You got to love Kyle Lowry because when he steps into it and he drains it, him and Patrick Patterson both actually are two of the NBA's leaders, I would say, in when they're stroking it, they look excellent. And when they're missing it, it's like, oh my God, you shoot that shot? Like, right. That's shot you take on a regular basis? Like, Pat's got to have more air balls than, like, he's up
there. It's like 50-50 swish air ball.
Exactly. It's unbelievable with that. But that's a great point. Those two guys are playing extremely well. You can't be upset with the way that they're playing right now.
I mean, it really is, like, oversimplifying things. But when you look at the construction of the team, I mean, that's what you're going to need if you want to have success, let's say, in the playoffs.
The basket looks like a hula hoop to DeMar DeRozan right now. And the
confidence. I mean, he's never... he's always had confidence, but just the way he's taking over games.
And I loved during the broadcast on Saturday, actually, which a great point that I think it was Leo brought up, was that DeMar went in the lane and he didn't draw a foul. I think he got twice in a row. And Leo said, you know what? He's got to go back in there and try to draw the foul now a third time. And immediately, like on cue, DeRozan goes for it again. And he said, like, this is something that in the past he probably would have shied away from. Mm-hmm. Now you're seeing DeMar, I think, understand his game like he never has before. I'm going to give a little bit of the thing I like the most about the win streak is, and I'm going to split this up quickly into two different things because I'm going to highlight mostly two different guys, but has been the play of the bench.
Right. Yeah.
And part of that, the first part of that I'm going to say is how Bismack Biyombo now has helped with JV being healthy, create this good big, like this really solid big man.
Like they combine to make
it's like, remember Power
center.
Rangers when they like came together and they did the thing where they
I do remember Power Rangers when they came together and did the thing.
So many, any younger people on this listening to this podcast are like, I have no idea what you're talking about. We just dated ourselves exactly. But the Power Rangers would come together and they would make that, like, I don't even remember what it's called, but like Mega Ranger.
Mega Ranger.
Was that really what it's called? No, oh man. I was like, dang, that's good. So they would make Mega Ranger. And if you look at what these two guys did again Saturday against Drummond, who's one of the, like, you can't argue that he's not a top four center in the NBA right now, Andre Drummond. And they did a great job of keeping him off the glass, protecting the rim.
I have to interrupt you.
Go ahead.
It's Mega Ranger.
It is Mega Ranger.
Good memory.
No, that just shows you how simple that it was. It's like Mega Ranger is the name.
Well, that wasn't even an English show. That was a Japanese show overdubbed.
Right.
Anyway, sorry.
Which is kind of sad.
I may have cut you off.
I mean, we've gushed about Bismack Biyombo and that contract all year long.
The perfect role player, guy who just gets it.
Someone who's getting better all the time.
Exactly.
All of a sudden, he's shooting with a little bit more confidence, even though that's still something you don't want to see. He's upped his free throws from last year by 10%, which is something that you have to give him a ton of credit for because that's all just working in the gym.
Literally,
like, that's working on your game.
Every time I've been at a Raptors practice, once it's over, Biyombo goes to the free throw line and just puts up shots.
Hangs up. Obviously
he's working on it.
And we all know about his defense. He's been playing at a really high level. He's got one of the best opponent field goal percentages at the rim in terms of guys at the rim when they take it at Bismack are shooting 45% at the rim, which is a great stat for Bismack. He's in the top 10 there. You're talking about him in a category with Hassan Whiteside, Andrew Bogut, Rudy Gobert, Festus Ezeli. So again, you can't give enough credit to him.
Biyombo's been awesome. I mean, and I love your point about him and Valanciunas kind of combining to make the mega center. And it's really true. I mean, they both give you different looks, but when you're, I think Casey, you know, he gets flack for his minutes management, but one thing he's doing with those guys well, I think is allowing them to share that center
position. He seems to have found a really great balance between the two of them. When one of them's not going or the other's in foul trouble, he's able to switch them up. It's fine. Both of them are really good defensive rebounders. I really like that. The other guy I really want to highlight on that bench is Terrence Ross. And I got to continue to eat crow because, you know, you remember November?
You had him out of town.
But remember November when he was shooting 26 from the floor and three?
Right.
He was averaging 3 points a game. Like,
I don't remember November, but I'll take your word for it.
Remember, though, when I kept harping about the defense and the lack of scoring? He's been shooting 40% from deep pretty much ever since December. The thing I love about him, too, is that he got killed earlier in the season for missing wide-open threes. We were talking about how no one in the league gets better looks at threes and is shooting such a poor percentage. He's knocking down 40% right now, and it seems like all of them he's nailing with a guy right up in his grill. And that's the beauty of Terrence Ross, is he's this hyper-athletic guy with a great body for the position, and he's able to elevate and hit that shot.
Here's a cool, he never stopped taking them, which is what I like, but here's a cool Terrence Ross stat courtesy of a friend of the show, Craig Battle, our stats expert.
Love Craig Battle.
Before the win streak, Terrence Ross was shooting 40% from the floor, which was eighth among Raptor regulars. During this streak, he's shooting 52.6% from the floor, second best on the team.
Yeah, he's been excellent. He's
43.8 from 3-point.
That offense, too, is translating to the other end. And that's the other part of Terrence Ross that I want to quickly say. I will throw in the caveat that he doesn't play a ton against other team starters. He's playing mostly against bench units.
That's fine.
I think I saw a stat recently that he's playing against like an average of 2.4 starters per time that he's on the floor.
That's by design.
But he's not taking the bad fouls that you've seen before. He's being more careful on his closeouts. He's staying in front of his man a lot better. I think that his defensive rating is reflective of the way that he's played defense lately. And you and I had argued about this before, about whether or not he's just going to be a scorer, whether he can be a two-way player in the league.
Yeah.
And I've always demanded that of him in terms of way that he will endear himself to me, and he's doing it.
He came into the league as a two-way player.
Right.
And then kind of quickly, it was just accepted that he'd just be a scorer.
He would never be able to. You saw him, he'd always be getting lost in the defense. All of a sudden, his man's wide open, knocking down a shot, and he's got the head on the swivel thing going. So those are the things I love the most about this winning streak so far. They're comforting to me that the Raptors have been able to go to their bench, a maligned group from before that all of a sudden has turned into a strength for them.
What don't you like about this win streak? Because, I mean, it's hard for me to come up with stuff. I mean, the quality competition might be one for me. The other kind of obvious one might be when you look at the minutes, having these guys play your stars still on the floor late in games. I mean, obviously that Lowry near hand injury, that would have been a real kind of red flag.
Especially since it was in a blowout.
Well, that's what I'm saying. When you didn't need him on the floor. Although I have a theory about that.
I'll start there, and I will say that the late game management of the stars has been the most troubling thing to me. You're already a team that's down Damari Carroll. You can't really afford an injury to DeRozan or Lowry at this point, especially since had Lowry been injured, think about the extra taxation it would have put onto DeMar DeRozan again. And that's something that
it changes everything. It's a two-headed monster. You need both those
guys. You do. And they're just so valuable to this team that during this win streak, I've had some difficulty understanding Dwayne Casey's logic in some of these blowouts. I remember the Clippers game, for example.
Mm-hmm.
They're up 20 points. There's 5 minutes left in the game, and they're still out there. He doesn't take Kyle out until 3 minutes left.
Well, let me share you my theory.
Sure.
Because maybe it'll change your mind. Maybe it won't. Late in those games, as much as it seems like a blowout, and this happens a lot in the NBA, I'm pretty convinced that Casey is saying, Lowry, come on out. We're going to replace you. And Lowry's saying, you know what? I'm good. I'm going to stay out here for a little bit longer.
And then
you can take me out. That happens all the time in the NBA. I mean, Lowry's a guy who's going to want to stay on the floor, even when they're up. I mean, it's going to take a lot for him to be pulled. Maybe you'd like to, again, this is just
history
theory.
History suggests Casey likes to do this. So what's the explanation for DeRozan then? So you think it's both of them saying that they want to stay out later?
No, certainly that would be my theory for Lowry, just because, you know, that's kind of in his MO. But you're right, there is a history there. But at least during that Magic game, that's all I was thinking was it the Magic when he hurt his hand? No, sorry, the Wizards.
Yep.
With Gortat, all I was thinking was like, I bet you Lowry just refused to come out, which happens all the time in the NBA.
See, I think history suggests Casey likes to play his stars late in games. And as he said in the Detroit game, that he was upset that the way they finished. But I felt like, again, you're up 20 points with 6 minutes left. You don't see elite teams playing their starters that late in games. Mm-hmm. I think the message Casey's trying to send is that they're not in that elite category yet, and they need to prove that they can close out games with their stars and not take a step back when they're up 20 just to play consistently for the full 48 minutes. The thing for me, though, is that...
What do you think about that, though? Whether or not they're in the elite category now?
They're still not. They're still. Think about it. Look at...
Cleveland.
There's five teams.
Oklahoma City.
There's four teams.
San Antonio. Golden State. Who's the fifth?
The fifth are the Raptors. Right now, I would say they're the fifth best team in the NBA.
You're saying there's a big gap between 4 and 5?
Yeah. I'm saying that if the Raptors play any of those four teams in a 7-game series, they make it to 6 games at best. And I don't think they get to six against most of them.
That would be admirable.
That's what I mean. So I can't consider them in that group. That being said, they clearly have in this win streak, which I really like, separated themselves from the Detroits, the Bostons, the Washingtons. Yes, they're a class ahead of those guys now. There's no question about it. Now it's going to be a big game coming up is that Bulls game. That's the one on the schedule where they're going to Chicago.
Always a big match.
Can they keep this sucker rolling? Can they beat Chicago in their own barn?
Because that West Coast trip, that doesn't really concern.
No, there's, like you said, the game that we're missing right like tonight, which we're not recording on, is the Denver game, which is the seeming trap game where they do have to go to the altitude, and they have been on a bit of a high.
They're on such a roll that, you do kind of expect to win. And then Phoenix, who, you know, just fired their coach
today.
Which
is a bad news for the Raptors, actually, because teams tend to play a little bit better when their coaches have just been fired.
Sportsnet.ca, Jeff Simmons throws out his three candidates for the Suns position and includes...
Quickly, no chance Steve Nash takes
it. It includes Steve Nash and Mike D'Antoni.
But no chance,
both would be fascinating. No chance. Yeah, I'd imagine not.
I said on Twitter today, it'd be brutal for Team Canada, right? Because he's the GM right now, and he would obviously step out of that position. So
currently
selfishly,
works
I hope
it
doesn't. Yeah, but it's like a very like laid back thing. He only comes in the home games.
Okay, but on the whole, I mean, are there more things that you like or don't like about the Raptors?
Yeah, the last thing I'll say I don't like.
I like. Really, yeah, you still have.
Last thing I don't like is the pouting and acting out after foul calls and when they don't go their way. I just think the entire team is guilty of it. It's been a theme for them for a long time.
To me, that's independent of the win streak. That's just an ongoing thing.
I guess so. I guess that you look at this and you're like, God, get over this. When the calls aren't going your way, just play through it. And you worry about when the whistles change in the playoffs that you're doing stuff like that. And I just hate it. I hate watching them do it.
Well, you know, it's easy to tell when a team's kind of not in the right mindset. I think interaction with referees is one of them, which is why it's kind of confusing in the case of the Raptors. But, you know, you might see that out of a team like the Cleveland Cavaliers over the last couple weeks, who, before firing their coach, obviously there was big red flags about what's happening in Cleveland, their chances of actually making it back to the finals or winning a title. They didn't think it would happen, so they fired David Blatt. We're going to talk to Damon Jones about it next on the Fan 590 and iTunes and Free Association. What's this?
This is horrible.
What just happened, though? What happened to the music?
This is what now you're telling me in my ear? This is the guy who's playing at the NBA All-Star game?
Oh, this is Sting. This is the famed Desert Rose by Sting.
Okay, this is the worst.
Well, okay. Now that he's hijacked this podcast, I guess we have to go there. Sting at the halftime of the All-Star game. That's preposterous, is it not?
Did they go down the list of like 500 people and then they finally hit like 436 and they were like, Sting, can you do it?
It's just inexplicable. I mean, what is your reasoning for that? Does he have an album coming out or something? Like maybe there's some corporate...
I think he's on tour in Toronto around the same time.
He happens to be in town.
And like, I think that also that because the prices are so ridiculously high to this sucker that people are thinking like it's going to be a lot of the season ticket holders for Leafs. Not going to say what
that's
demographic is, it might be
rich white guys,
elderly,
that's interesting,
yes,
though.
Caucasian
old rich
crowd,
white guys.
Who are going to be, is there anything I want to see more than the crowd shots of old white guys dancing to these terrible sing songs?
Well, listen, I mean, and that's a good point. I actually also saw Brandon Dunlop from Sportsnet, the anchor. He wrote it on Twitter too, is that the people in those seats at courtside paying $900 a seat are the same type of people, like you said. Who would be...
Well, they're going for more than that during All-Star.
Are they? Yeah, okay.
What, $900 a game? Yeah. That's going to get you in the building. You're not sitting courtside for $900. Are you kidding?
So the lesson here is big money loves Sting. I don't know. I mean, for me, I wouldn't have ever landed on Sting as my choice.
Who would you choose?
I do have choices. It wouldn't be Sting.
Give me your choice number one.
And frankly, it wouldn't be too far out of the realm of Sting, to be completely honest. I mean, my first one, it's pretty obvious here. Toronto. Picking up the pieces. Hello, Gordon Lightfoot.
No.
Bring Gordon.
He plays at the Grey Cup. You can't put the guys who play at Grey Cup.
Gordon, that totally goes against my
choice. Oh, crap.
Oh, interesting. Well, we're going to get to your choice in a second because I couldn't make up my mind. And if Gordon can't make it, well, then we got a pretty badass backup in place for him.
You know Gordon Lightfoot sings that If You Could Read My Mind
Which
love song?
Which is a great song.
You're going to play that at NBA halftime?
No, but if Gordon doesn't make it, Neil will be there.
This is a little bit better.
To kill the crowd.
I could get down
in
with
a good
this.
Way. Yeah, Neil Young, man. I think, why not go for Neil Young?
Why not go for a double bill, Neil Young and Gordon Lightfoot?
Come
on, it's not in the demo. Like, there's got to be literally 100 hip-hop acts that you have to be able to pick up and call the phone to. Speaking of sweet pop acts.
Yeah, what's your choice if you got a better one?
Come on. Speaking of great, if the Grey Cup can get my man Biebs, why can't the NBA All-Star game?
What, this is Biebs?
What do you mean this is Biebs? This is straight fire. Like, from the deepest volcano on the planet, just bursting. Ooh!
I'm kind of overwhelmed right now. You'd actually
this
go
comes
with,
on and I'm out in a bar and I'm get the head
if
dip going.
If you can see JD in the studio right now, sipping, I don't think he's joking.
Start sipping the
like so this
the old
is
drank.
This is not an ironic choice for you.
Oh, absolutely not.
Okay,
who's turning off the Beeb show?
Me, hopefully. I'm going to walk out of here. I got to take a minute and just kind of digest this. When we come back, let's talk to Damon Jones and talk Cavs. This is ridiculous. What do you mean? Better make up
your mind. What do you mean? Hi, this is Chuck Swirsky, voice of the Chicago Bulls. You're listening to Free Association. Onions, baby onions.
All right, welcome to Free Association. Really excited about our next guest. You know him from his 11-year NBA career, in which he made a name for himself as, you're going to have to correct me here, I believe it's the greatest shooter on the face of the earth. Damon Jones, former Cleveland Cavalier, current shooting coach or shooting consultant with the Cavs and the Canton Charge in the D-League. Now, Damon, what was the nickname exactly?
Best shooter in the world.
The best shooter in the world. I was close. All right, let's get into it. LeBron's a dude who's obviously in the news all the time because of how skilled he is and whatnot and how much coverage he gets. But, you know, this week in particular, obviously all the questions are around him and his relationship with Coach Blatt, who's no longer on the team, his relationship with Ty Lue, the new coach up there in Cleveland. What were your conversations like with that group kind of over the past few weeks in terms of, did you see this coming? Was it simply inevitable? Or are you surprised at the timing of this? Because I think most people are.
Well, I mean, it's a tough situation. No one really knew about it. I mean, like, if you listen to David Griffin's press conference, mm-hmm. it was his ultimate decision. And I'm really glad that I have this platform right now to get all the critics and the media people off of LeBron James, because he didn't know this was going to happen. He's been for David Blatt and, you know, has been very respectful of him as the coach. And, you know, all superstar coaches don't see eye to eye all the time, but he had nothing to do with his firing or, you know, he was always on board. You know, his thing was, let's find the best way to get the job done, going to the finals last year and not winning it and coming back with almost the same group as last year. You know, the focus has been on working hard and just getting better. Mm-hmm. So I just hate that for this past week that the focus has been on LeBron James and him having input on firing David Blatt, which wasn't true at all. And if you listen to David Griffin, he made it clear that it was his decision, and that was it.
I mean, some of the perception has always been behind their relationship that LeBron was more comfortable with Ty, and that when push came to shove, Lou was the guy that he was really listening to. And I'm sure you're with someone around the situation knows better than anybody else. But as an outsider, you know, we've seen the internet clips, we've seen the video, the highlights of LeBron kind of blowing past Blatt and going to Lou. Do you not think that it was at all difficult for Blatt in that situation, like knowing that Ty and LeBron had that type of relationship, or is that not the case?
Well, I mean, it has nothing to do with LeBron's and Ty Lue's relationships. And, you know, it was tough for Coach Blatt from the beginning, but, you know, everyone was behind Coach Blatt and trying to help in any way possible, because he'd never coached a day in the NBA. So he came in with a great resume from coaching in Europe and doing a lot of great things over there, but the NBA game is a lot different. So, of course, he has to lean on T. Lou. He has to lean on Larry Drew, Jim Boylan, and those guys, the assistant coaches. So that's why most of the times that you saw players not just going to Ty Lue, but going to Larry Drew when it was something about offense. And because Ty Lue was the defensive coordinator and it was a lot of questions, they went to him. But it didn't mean that they were undermining David Blatt. It was just that's the position that Ty Lue was in. And because he played in the NBA and he's been under Doc Rivers the last couple years, he kind of knows the landscape of what's going on in the NBA. And I think that the media kind of blew that out of proportion, saying that LeBron James' relationship with Ty Lue was the reason why, you know, this move happened, but it wasn't.
You mentioned Blatt's inexperience as one of his downfalls as the head coach of this team. But the biggest one for me, at least, it has got to be, and I'd love to get your read on this, is the way that he employed Kevin Love. He's been kind of relegated a bit more to that spot-up shooter, a guy that kind of is a knockdown stretch four and a dude that's getting a lot of defensive rebounds. Like, is there a way that you think they should be employing him differently, or is it just a thing where the pieces don't fit there? Because when I look at this roster and I think if they end up playing the Warriors again in the final, I don't think that Kevin Love is on the floor for their best five to beat the Warriors.
Well, I mean, it's a tough situation. And like you alluded to at the beginning, it's tough when you have three superstars on the same team and you have to try to get everybody shots or make everybody happy here. I mean, it has to be some semblance of sacrifice there. And I think earlier this year that, you know, I think LeBron tried to go out of his way to get Kevin the ball in more comfortable places and things of that nature. But I think what Ty Lue is doing right now is going to alleviate all those problems, and that's picking up the pace. And the pace of the game has to be faster for this team. If you do a lot of running, then there are going to be opportunities for everybody because the ball is going to move and you're moving at a fast pace. If Kevin Love and or Kyrie Irving was healthy last year, we won the NBA championship last year. And it is what it is. You know, come playoff time, the game slows down and you know, you attack certain things, and Kevin Love is going to be a big part of that. You know, he fits well with this team because he has a skill set that this day and age, the NBA game, where it's more free-flowing and being able to shoot the basketball, and he can rebound it. He can go on the post, like you said, and do some stuff down there. So he's very versatile, and that's something that Ty Lue is going to need down the stretch.
Well said, man. Listen, I really appreciate you taking this time. Like I said, thanks again. Damon Jones is a shooting consultant with the Cleveland Cavaliers organization. Good stuff, man. I really appreciate you
coming
on.
Thanks again for doing this, Powell. We'll see you All-Star Weekend.
Okay, guys. Thanks.
Thanks again to Damon Jones for doing that, jumping on. Again, a guy that is really tight with LeBron James, and you could obviously tell in that interview.
You're getting one side of the story. You're getting LeBron's side.
Okay, here's the thing, though. Obviously, LeBron James had a hand in this firing. The thing that bugs me, though, is that it's actually, I don't mind. Like, if you're a superstar player, if you're the best player in the NBA, and you came back to your market as a free agent, why shouldn't LeBron have some decision in terms of who he plays with, his coaches?
He absolutely should. And, you know, I'm kind of with you. Like, just even in general, obviously when you're in first place and you fire the coach, something's up. And,
yeah,
and
LeBron,
I love the reaction.
Didn't know. Oh, you fired the coach?
No, but even,
without even consulting me?
I mean, in the sense of something's not working for you. I mean, you make that change for a reason. Even if it's the fact that your super-duper star player doesn't like him, whatever.
Here's the thing that Damon said that was the real telltale for me was that, and you got to read between the lines a little bit, but he's saying that, oh, it's not LeBron. He always respected David and they always kind of got along and he was surprised as anybody by the trade. But then he's also saying that David basically wasn't connecting with the players and that coming from a non-NBA market, he didn't really know how to establish relationships with the players. So it's like, well, which is it? Is it one where the guy didn't have a good relationship with the players and they didn't have his trust and his respect?
I mean,
or it was a total shocker.
I think it's pretty black and white what happened. It's pretty clear that this was rumblings happening from all the way going back to last season. This was kind of inevitable. The timing is a little interesting. But, you know, when you see the way they promoted Ty Lue, and they've been playing well with Lue as their coach, and they found Kevin Love to get more involved and all that. Small sample size.
Crushed the Spurs.
But I'm thinking, you know, maybe it would be best to bring someone in who LeBron isn't so comfortable with. I mean, I was thinking back to when we had Drew Joyce, his high school coach, on the show, and I just want to play this clip from that interview.
LeBron, it was so funny that you asked that question because David Blatt has received some, you know, criticism about some things, you know, LeBron changing a play and some of those kind of things. And LeBron made a cute statement that's kind of been his MO for any coach who's been with him. You know, you're going to take a lot of scrutiny. I'm not always right, and I'm not afraid to allow someone else to be right. And I think David Blatt said that very well, too, that, hey, you know, at the end of the day, we won the game, and if LeBron's call was right, then I'm all for it, and that's how you got to be. If your ego is caught up in it, then, you know, it's not going to work.
But then you risk being run over by LeBron.
Exactly.
You become weak.
It's easier to say in theory when you're his high school coach and millions of dollars aren't on the line. But I think it's a bit tougher.
It is complex, though, because you're right. Like, if you're a player of LeBron's magnitude, your word should be the final word in your organization. I'm totally down with that.
I don't know if final word, because like I said, I think that some of the player personnel decisions have been kind of haunting them. But I do believe that, well, that's just a whole different story. But I do think that there has to be at least some give and take with a star player of his caliber. Listen, when people call LeBron James a basketball genius, or I don't know if it was him that called himself a basketball genius, but I mean, it's true. You should consult a basketball genius. You should consult a guy that's your only chance at getting a ring over the next few years.
Well, that's the latter point is the bigger one, is that this is a guy who you want to appease. You want to make him happy.
Right, but let's not have any misconceptions that this was a shocker and that LeBron James was blindsided by this or that he didn't help promote this decision.
Agreed. Listen, I want to talk some fake trades.
Speaking of, before we do that, what? Would you fake trade Kevin Love right now? No. Well, I say no.
You got to tell me who I'm getting back.
Let's say...
Think on it. Toss me one. After we come back from this little break
to the Celtics for that same package that they were going to offer for Kevin Love, the fake Kevin Love package, the Jay Crowder.
Well, you'll have to hold on. Just sleep on it for a second because I don't know what package you're talking about. Well, we're going to get into it after this break. A lot of trade talk, Blake Griffin talk. I hear he's been busy.
I played up on here the trade in Toronto. Machine.
Oh no! So we're going to do that right now on Free Association
and All Star stuff.
And All Star stuff.
Oh, and I'm the type of guy who will never settle down. Where pretty girls are, well, you know that I'm around. I kiss them and I love them, cause to me they're all the same. I hug them and I squeeze them, they don't even know my name. They call me the Wanderer, yeah, the Wanderer. I roam around, 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 around.
Well, the next episode of The Blake Show might be moving locales.
That was terrible.
At least he
held up his finger at me like he was waiting to just drop the biggest bomb of a joke.
Like, hold on a second.
Wham, wham. But it's true what you said.
Well, at least that's, you know, if you believe what you read on the internet,
Blake Griffin,
his name's being shopped around on the trade market. I think that's crazy.
Me too.
Let's move on. But I got more fake trades that are not Griffin related that I'd love to toss away because...
Fake Griffin trades? I only came with Griffin trades.
Well, you should read your emails, bud.
Okay, sorry. I have lots of Griffin trades.
All right, toss them all out, then I'll go to mine.
Okay, let's play some Tinker in the Trade Machine with Blake Griffin because the internet has bandied around his name.
How many trades do you have?
Six.
Oh my god. Okay, so just risk through them. Okay. I'll just say yes or no.
Yes or no.
If I'm who am I?
Okay,
I'm Doc Rivers.
Yeah, you're Doc Rivers.
I say no.
You're rolling around.
I say no already.
No, but let's put it this way. Like, we all know what happened with Blake. Broke his hand again. You're like, you know what? Our window is now. Maybe Blake can't come back for the playoffs. Maybe we're in a little bit more trouble than we think. Maybe we need to build a little bit of a...
Right.
We need to change up our core a little
Terrible
bit.
Terrible management, but maybe you can convince me otherwise.
Right. So the Atlanta Hawks come calling. They're like, listen, we want to get rid of Jeff Teague and we want to also change up our core. We would like to offer you Al Horford, and he'll re-sign there because he's on his expiring deal. Jeff Teague. And a first-round pick for Blake Griffin.
No.
But Al Horford would play good. Remember when they were good with Eric Bledsoe and they had the two-point guard thing going on?
I already have a point guard. I said no. Next.
Well, the next trade also involves Jeff Teague because he goes, okay, no, don't hang up. What if we take out the first-round pick and we offer you Paul Millsap? And we'll take Jamal Crawford back, though. We need something. We need to guard ourselves.
Take Crawford. Millsap I'm much more interested in because it's a better fit alongside the guys I already have. I still say no.
Okay. The next trade.
Like, Blake Griffin's really good.
He is really good.
All right,
can I make the case quickly? If I'm the Clippers, I say yes to those deals. I think both those guys slot in. They have some good shooting. You can actually stretch Millsap and Horford out to the three-point line.
Right.
You can play the two-point guard thing with Teague and Paul. Gives them a little bit more rest. It's much better than that second unit, which sucks right now, being led by Austin Rivers.
I don't
Rivers.
See how you've made your franchise better for the short or long term with that. But next.
The next trade. The Chicago Bulls call.
Mm-hmm.
They say, hey, Clippers,
mm-hmm.
we have Pau Gasol, Mirotić, McDermott, and a first for Blake Griffin.
No. No. Gasol's a free agent, and he's got a couple years left max.
Actually, no, Griffin's Powell's not a free agent. He's got one more year left on his deal after this year.
Right. Okay. I still say no. Next. It's going to take a lot to lure Blake Griffin away from my team.
The New York Knicks call you.
Okay.
We want to trade Carmelo Anthony for Blake Griffin straight up.
Now we're talking. Swish.
Oh, that was so money.
Our technical producer.
That was so good. That's
like, one for one today.
Yeah, that's good.
Now I'll talk. Still going to take a lot to kind of lure me into it, but I'll have the discussion. What's the next one? Like, I think Melo...
You're not going to take
Melo's,
this next one based
Melo's
on the...
overlooked. But yeah, keep going.
The Bucks call.
Out. Next.
The Bucks offer you their first rounder in this year's draft.
And Giannis.
Which could be Ben Simmons. No. Chris Middleton and Jabari Parker.
And a top six pick.
Potentially. Yeah, it'll be a top six pick this year.
No, I'm not going to do it.
All right.
Not convinced in Jabari Parker being that guy.
Okay, I threw this one in just for fun. The Toronto Raptors call. They say, we'll give you DeRozan. He'll re-sign in L.A., his hometown. Mm-hmm. He loves it there. Mm-hmm. And Patrick Patterson for Blake Griffin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a tough one.
I would do that deal if I'm the Raptors.
You probably have
today.
To do that deal.
The Raptors do that deal in a heartbeat, no?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, except that's for, you know who doesn't do it?
The Clippers.
The Clippers.
And it's nothing against either of those guys.
Yeah, it's just the way J.J. Redick's playing right now. They're not going to sit him
okay,
on
well,
play tomorrow.
Well,
all right, hit me with yours.
I thought we had pretty clearly talked about acknowledging that trading Griffin is kind of crazy, so let's look around the other potential fake trades on the market. That was my approach.
But there are guys like Wojnarowski saying that, like, there's some merit
probably,
to it.
There's probably some merit. I just don't buy into it. But these ones you can talk me into. I'll start simple. And again, shoot it down quickly if you don't like it. The Phoenix Suns.
Okay.
They're looking to kind of not start over, but probably make some pretty widespread changes. They got a lot of money on the books that they want to get rid of. Want to just clear up that cap space and some other problems on the team. So you look to trade Markieff Morris, who wants out anyways.
I'm listening. I like Markieff.
Natural destination, Detroit Pistons. Join him back with his brother. A stretch forward to play beside Drummond. A really good fit beside Drummond, I think. And you can do it for Brandon Jennings, who's an expiring contract, who's probably not getting the minutes he should be getting on that Pistons team.
Wait, so all I'm getting is an expiring contract back? No.
Well, like, okay, I don't think you're going to get too much better. Like, no one's going to give a serious asset for Morris, who's proven to be kind of a bit of a locker room cancer on that team. Anyways.
Listen.
That's my solution for Morris problem.
But guess what? Guess what, Detroit? I want your pick. Morris is a good player. You're getting
a
these brothers together.
And
Jennings.
Money off the books.
Yeah, money off the books. I like the money off the books.
Because they have, you think of Chandler's contract.
They got a bad contract. You're not getting out of that
Chandler. They've got a bunch of money tied up. Anyways, okay.
Pick.
Let's move on. So you're going to make changes on the Clippers. Fine.
You shut down my Hawks for Griffin. That's so upset.
But so let's stay on the Clippers. So okay. You want to make some changes. You're thinking, I don't like the nucleus of my team. We're not going to win going forward.
Do these trades, by the way, work?
These are all trade machine vetted.
Okay, because I'm going to say
these are all trade machine vetted.
Okay. Mine were too.
So you want to break it up. You're saying Chris Paul is getting a little old. Maybe I want to move him. But I like Chris Paul, and he's still very, very good. You're saying Blake Griffin, his hand's broken. He's fighting staff members. Maybe this isn't the guy we want to build our team around. But I like Griffin. I don't want to move him. But the third guy of their big three, DeAndre Jordan. I don't like DeAndre Jordan. I don't like paying max money to a guy who can't stay on the
floor. You watching that team lately?
Yeah,
Chris Paul and DeAndre playing great together.
He's playing great.
Just went through this whole emoji ordeal.
And wow, what a waste of time that was. Jordan's trade value has never been higher. So let's find a team where they might be in the market for a center, a kind of defensive franchise-changing center.
Put him next to Gobert in Utah. That'd be fun.
Oh, I wish. No, we're heading out east. A team with a ton of assets to trade. The Boston Celtics.
So now the Celtics called about Griffin, and they offered that Jay Crowder.
Yeah, sorry, I never got to
Avery
that.
Bradley.
What was the supposed?
Quickly.
Yeah, yeah.
So Zach Lowe had written quickly about a proposed deal that he thought might work, which was Jay Crowder, Avery Bradley, one of their bigs. So assuming Jared Sollinger.
Yeah.
And one of the Brooklyn picks going to the Clippers for Blake Griffin. And guess what? I like it for both teams.
No, that's a nice haul for...
Jay Crowder is really good.
I know. I like Bradley the best out of that group. And the pick, if it's the
you
Nets...
You like Bradley more than Crowder?
Yeah, I know Crowder's really good. I like
Avery
Bradley.
Best player on that team.
He is. But, you know, my trade looks like crap
now. You get perimeter defense. You get three-point shooting. You get that pick.
In my trade, you trade DeAndre Jordan. You get back Marcus Smart, your backup point guard, guy who can maybe take it over when Paul retires. Evan Turner, a little help on the wings. You get David Lee's expiring contract. That's $15 million right there off the books. And you get Brooklyn's pick.
This year?
Or next year.
The Ben Simmons, that's a big difference.
Maybe not the Simmons pick, but then maybe the Celtics
pick.
So
you lottery protect it?
You get a first round pick. Click. So basically, if you're the Clippers, you're getting little pieces and picks.
Clippers say click. They're trying to win this year.
Okay, last one.
Click.
One team that I think is quietly in a huge position to deal is the Orlando Magic. Mm. A lot of young assets. They're probably getting to the place where they're getting a little frustrated. The wheel's spinning in the mud. Let's start winning some games, like next season. So they call Memphis. And they're like, hey, you know your point guard? Mike Conley.
Oh, I like you.
Who's coming off the books, and we really want a point guard, and your team's probably not going to move forward.
You don't like Alfred Payton anymore?
Payton's okay, but he's really flawed. Like, if I'm really serious about winning, he's not my point guard of the future. But I offer him to Memphis. I don't tell Memphis that.
Okay.
And I offer him in the trade, along with Tobias Harris for Mike Conley.
Yes, both teams.
That's a good one.
The only you've got your heir apparent to Zach Randolph. I like that. I actually think that the Grizzlies are kind of stealing this trade, to be honest with you.
Really?
Conley's good.
Harris is really good, and Payton's very good.
I like the Conley.
Conley's a low-end kind of star point guard. Anyways, for Orlando, on a team like Orlando, I think he's a great fit.
I will accept that trade. Good, congratulations, sir.
Deal.
I'll take it.
All right, cool. That was successful.
And if I'm the Memphis GM, I'm like, that's good, because we weren't re-signing Conley anyway.
Exactly.
So this
exactly.
is a pretty good move for us.
Win-win.
It's a big haul for a guy.
Orlando gets to pitch Conley. Okay.
Can we do All-Star stuff quick? All-Star stuff.
We got a little less than 5 minutes, but a lot of stuff to get to.
Okay. I want to talk about the 3-point contest and the dunk contest quickly.
Let's decide who should be in, because we still don't know who the participants are.
Right.
We know Zach Levine's going to be there.
Okay. Can I say that right as we were going, Josh Goldberg, our producer, like, ruined my list for 3-point shooters. Like, as we're going this, he's like, oh, you know that Devin Booker's in the 3-point contest? What? No.
So let's go quick here. First, give me who you want to see in the 3-point contest.
Okay, so I'll take a little time here. I made a list last night. I made my qualifications. I said, you got to shoot at least 30%, 38% from three.
Okay.
You got to have at least 2.5 makes a game. Hmm. So 6 attempts per game, roughly. That's what that gets you. And then you get a bonus for star power because it's All-Star weekend. So I have 4 locks that I said these guys are 100% in the competition.
What's the field? 6?
8.
Wow.
So
has it always been 8?
Yeah. Wow. So these are my 4 locks. Steph, duh, reigning champ. Clay, duh, reigning runner-up.
Lucas Nogueira.
No.
What?
3rd, JJ Redick, having an unbelievable, the best season from 3 other than Steph.
Mm-hmm.
And then 4, Kyle Korver, who's having a down year, only shooting 38, but he meets all the qualifications and he's a top 10 3-point shooter of all time.
He's having a really down year.
Yeah, but 38% from 3 still, and he's still making 2 a game. Like, it's not like he's been horrid. And again, top 10 3-point shooter all time. Like, no question. All the numbers back that up. Here's my bubble. These guys do not make the cut. Kawhi Leonard.
Okay.
Leading the NBA in 3-point percentage, but he only has 171 attempts. He's out. He probably doesn't even want to be there anyway.
That's insane. Leonard should be there.
No, no chance. 171 shots. He doesn't take any threes. He takes less than two a game.
He's shooting like 50%.
He's not there. On the bubble, cut. James Harden. Can't reward this guy.
Yeah,
having
no
a terrible season.
Fine with that.
He's shooting under 35% from deep this year.
I'm fine with that.
He's out. Harshest cut for me, CJ McCollum. 2.5 threes taken per game, 6 shots a game, 39% from three. Most improved candidate.
He deserves some love from the league.
He does.
I don't agree with cutting him.
I cut him because he needs another year or two as a league's top marksman, so he's out. Here's my 4 guys in.
Okay.
Paul George.
Yep.
38% from deep, 131 made threes.
Star power.
7
a
game.
Star power in the competition.
And guess what? He's shooting 38%, and there's probably no player that commands more attention from defenses individually on the league than him. So he's my guy. Kyle Lowry. We're in Toronto.
I think he's a lock to be in it.
39% from deep.
I think he's a lock to. I really do think he's in a lock.
Got to have him in. Ryan Anderson.
Love it. Yep.
40%, 6 a game, top 10 in all categories. Got to have
him. Was almost one of my fake trades.
And finally, 4th, which is someone who might probably get bumped. Kevin Durant.
Oh, I'd love that.
Why is Kevin Durant not in consideration? Okay, he doesn't make all my qualifications quite.
That's okay. I don't care.
But let's be honest. Make the case that Clay and Steph, well, how come they can get 8 and 11 threes a game? But these guys, they deserve to be in it. Those are my 4. That's my 8.
Okay.
Who would you have in?
That's tough. You know,
My
first gut was Ryan Anderson, because I like putting Kawhi in there. I like having it also weekend, like your biggest stars front and center. You know, that's a big part of the appeal, which is why I want Leonard in there. Yeah, so I guess I'm saying Ryan Anderson, but he's super qualified
to
be in
the
competition.
We know that Devin Booker's in and one of those guys is out. So my perfect thing is out. let's quickly do.
Devin Booker could be in it. That's fine.
I'm not saying he doesn't deserve to be, but
he's
like
a
really good three-point shooter. Sure, but do it for more than one rookie season, kiddo. Like, please.
They're trying to build stars.
None of those guys that I named deserve to be bumped for
him. And also, in all fairness, I don't know if any stars are ever built off the three-point contest, but the dunk contest is a different story. That is a star-building platform. Kind of, what's his name? Zach LaVine's to lose.
Yeah.
Like, I don't see any. I got a bunch of names. I don't see any of them giving him a run for the money.
Okay, I'll throw these guys. So, bummer. Two quick bummers. Andrew Wiggins, for some reason, continues to refuse to do this event.
It's because he practices beside LaVine and he sees what he does every day.
Right.
He knows he's not going to have a chance.
Still, come on. It's in Toronto. You can still dunk really well. Like, that doesn't mean you,
there's an argument to me,
can't win, doesn't mean
you
shouldn't be in it.
Put on a show for the fans.
Yeah, exactly. And who knows? You never know. Maybe Zach blows a couple dunks. He tries to get too creative and Wiggy takes it home. It also sucks that Larry Nance Jr. is out because of the knee thing. He wanted to be really in it.
That
he obviously is
a
legacy
one.
Kid. Yeah, so here's the thing. He could win. You know why? He already has two dunks lined up. One, he sits down in a chair underneath the basket. Kobe comes out, kicks him out of the chair, and then Kobe sits in the chair
and
he does a Kobe dunk over Kobe in the chair. The crowd goes nutso.
Yeah, but here's the
thing. He gets tens across the board. Then he just does a dunk where he puts on his dad's jersey and he does the dad dunk.
The Kobe dunk, the flaw in that idea, which I love the idea, but the inherent flaw in it is the fact that Kobe hates his teammates. Why would he help out? Like, why would he say yes?
You're right. And you know what would be good?
Kobe hates Larry Nance.
But I was going to say, this would be great revenge for Kobe for those tweets from Larry Nance when he was a kid. Remember the hateful tweets towards Ryan?
That's
why Kobe's like, I'm in. I'll be in the chair. And then Lance...
He's going to swat it. He's going to jump up out of the chair.
No, Nance is just sitting in the chair waiting for Kobe. And then nobody comes out of the tunnel.
I see Kobe
over the empty chair.
I see Kobe showing up, sitting in the chair, playing along until the moment of truth comes. Yeah, he jumps on the chair.
Taking out his legs. Yeah,
tackles
that's very
him,
Kobe.
Kind
thing.
Of a slam ball.
That's right, Josh. Your hero is a jerk.
He's talking to Josh Goldberg.
That's right. So other guys. So the three guys I'd like to see most there, and I don't even think that we'll see two of these guys.
Let's go back and forth. We might be doubling up on someone here.
We both want
one of mine's a dream one who's not going to be there.
Can we get T-Ross back?
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Come on. It's home crowd. T-Ross, come get your belt back from Zach LaVine. They're both very similar dunkers, though. So,
although Ross even says, like, he told me he doesn't have the same bounce he even did a few years ago. I don't know if I buy
know.
It.
He looks pretty good to me when he's flying down the court on fast break.
He's talking
finishing.
About contest dunks, though.
So,
but
we're
yeah,
not
I'd
doubling
love
up
to
there.
See that.
Are we doubling up on Aaron Gordon?
Yeah, we are.
We have to.
Although I was thinking you put Aaron a sub contest, Aaron Gordon and Porzingis, and you have him do like a put back. Dunk off.
Porzingis doesn't belong in the dunk contest. He's got some great putbacks,
he belongs in the putback dunk contest.
Okay, you're right. I agree with that.
But yeah, Gordon can survive in the real thing too because he's just freak out.
I do have a big, however, I'd like to see, and this is not an original idea. I stole this from a friend, but when we were talking about this last night,
yeah,
DeAndre Jordan.
Oh, that would be cool. Yeah, it would be like
they always have their token big guys, and he's such a freak. Like even when we're at that Raptors game the other night, when he catches those lob passes, like no one throws down more emphatic dunks than him. Maybe he's got some creativity. I think he'd be good.
No, he'd be great. I mean, shades of JaVale McGee, maybe, who, you know, a much worse player, but a pretty cool contest dunker.
Right. Those are my four guys I want to see.
Okay. So adding to your list, a dream of all guys in the NBA, and I'm not including LeBron, would be Russ Westbrook.
Okay.
You're not
going to
see
him.
Funny
that you mentioned that, though. I think Westbrook's more of a in-game dunker. I think he would just literally run down the floor and just throw down a really hard dunk and scream.
No,
and
he tries to break the rim. That's
the
dunk.
What I mean. Okay.
The glass, he's going to shatter the glass
on the
unbreakable backboard.
I thought about Russ, though. That's a good one.
Well, he's got the kind of combo of strength and athleticism that I don't think we've seen since Vince Carter. Mm-hmm. If he were
he's
to be in a contest.
He's also a super competitor, though. So if he wants to do it, he's going to Tonya Harding someone to win.
Right. I love that. Another one is, two more here. Will Barton.
Yeah.
Who's a crazy good jumper.
Yeah, and
cool
a really
dunker.
Good athlete. He's got that sneaky long body that
let's capitalize on this kind of breakout season.
But again,
too
similar to Zach LaVine. I think you need a dude who's like way different than Zach to do it.
But LaVine gets the height as well.
Right.
You know, and that's what separates him. He's a smaller guy. He's like 6'2".
You write for a living. You're an editor. Come on.
I don't speak for a living. Clearly.
What's your last one? Who's your last guy?
Well, in the vein of Terrence Ross, best dunker on the team. But he won't do it because he hasn't seen enough of the floor. Is Norm Powell. Powell
interesting.
Is a crazy sick dunker.
Yeah.
Crazy again, he's sick. Not, yeah, both. Both of those
it's
things
crazy
at once.
Sick.
But the problem is he hasn't played enough. He's not a big enough name for the rest of the NBA to get on board.
I like it. I'm in.
Here's mine.
I don't care. I'm in. I'm in on that. So what? So was neither was Jeremy Evans when he went in. Didn't he win?
That's my.
I didn't know who Jeremy Evans was.
We're going to talk a lot more dunk contest next week because we're going to have Vince Carter on the show.
Yeah, Vince Carter on the show.
Talking about his dunk contest experience. We'll dive into it deeper there. But Jeremy Evans has one of my favorite, most underrated dunks ever. The painter dunk.
I like the painter dunk.
The highly conceptual painter dunk.
The painter dunk was good.
Okay, so listen, that's a wrap today. This has been a lot of fun. Again, Vince Carter next week. I couldn't be more excited for that.
Tune in.
You can catch us on iTunes, on sportsnet.ca. If you hit up sportsnet.ca, you'll see the first All-Star tweaking story, which we're adding new ideas to All-Star Weekend. This one's adopting the NHL's divisional 3-on-3 tournament.
Ooh.
And so I put teams together and we kind of figure out who wins. Super quick here. I put a poll at the end of the story so you can kind of make your pick. The people say that the Central Division would have the best team. LeBron, Paul George, and Andre Drummond. That's your 3-on-3 team.
I don't go any bigs in my 3-on-3 team.
Coming second.
Hey, you!
These teams are stupid with 17%. So the internet, as advertised, bunch of animals. But yeah, hit us up on sportsnet.ca. Leave some comments on iTunes. What am I forgetting?
Big business!
And big business, it's always open. You're listening to Free Association, and now you're not.
Now when you get out here, don't you have no fear. Put your hands on your hip and let your backbone slip and work out.
This is about all of us. I love you, people.